Hello and welcome to Sense in Numbers, a podcast created and hosted by two people who have varying levels of experience in mental health issues. We are not mental health professionals, we just want to create a format for people to listen, share and find support in. Each episode will concentrate on different aspects of mental health illness, treatment and experience.
We also feel it pertinent to deliver a trigger warning due to the subject matter of the podcast. You may hear some distressing details and stories. There will also be some mature language and possibly my squeaky crying voice. So listener discretion is advised.
Gemma's got a pee head. Gemma's got a pee head and the headphones look massive. Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Sense in Numbers podcast. My name is Bennington Steele and I'm joined today by...
I'm still just Gemma. And the panting is Misha, by the way, not me.
No, it's not. Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in again. We apologise that it's been quite a significant gap in between episode 4 and 5.
We should stop apologising, I think.
Well, yeah, and also it's free, so...
Well, let's just maybe explain a little bit more. We've had the conversation with a few people who've got in touch asking when the next one's going to be out, which is nice that people are anticipating it. But we've had to explain a few times that obviously we're both working full time. I also work 3 hours away from where we live, so that's not terribly convenient. And sometimes we gear up for recording, and because it's such a personal subject matter, sometimes neither of us or...
Well, it predominantly it's me.
Yeah, but sometimes it's both and we're just worn out and we can't, you know, it's a little bit exhausting.
Yeah, but we appreciate people's patience. Yeah. And we're going to endeavour to try and release at least one a month.
We'll see how it goes.
But yeah, thanks for bearing with us. How about episode 4?
How about it?
We had Jay Money on.
We did, she was grand.
She was fantastic and it was a bit refreshing, wasn't it, to have... another person with their opinions,
not just
experiences.
Yeah, not just opinions, but the fact that she was speaking from a perspective that neither of us can understand. So I'm really glad that that's what we got out of our first guest. And I think hopefully the ones we've got lined up for future appearances will do the same.
Yep, strongly agree.
Thank you, Jesse.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jamie. It was right. Shall we just stop this foreplay and get straight into some meat?
I love meat.
Oh, you do love meat. It is now time for Preposterous Past Procedures.
Go on.
How do you like it?
I love it, but I love it when I do it because you always do it wrong.
I've tried this time, yeah.
So you're saying you didn't try the other time?
Well, no, I just went for comedy. But this one is also, it's not funny, it's grim, but anyway, are you ready?
Go on.
You ready for my PPP? This episode's preposterous past procedure is called rotational therapy.
Ooh.
Have you heard of it?
Yes.
Oh, piss off, have you?
Well, I have because I always actually research things before I do mine. So I've seen it, but I didn't pick it, so.
Okay. Rotational therapy is more or less what it sounds like. Patients sat down in chairs. They were called Cox's chair.
Why?
If you give me a minute.
All right.
They were called Cox's chair and were spun around. This outlandish treatment was invented by Eremus Darwin, who was Charles Darwin's granddaddy. Eremus, man.
Not Erasmus.
No, E-R-A-M-U-S.
Never heard that.
Someone's
going
to be like, it's Eremus, you bastard. Eremus?
Whatever.
Definitely not Erasmus. So Charles Darwin did some serious stuff and then this clown.
He was trying for his time.
Anyway, yeah, Charles Darwin's granddad in the early 19th century created rotational therapy. It was used to treat patients suffering from conditions of mania or elevated arousal. Elevated arousal, Gemma?
I heard what you said.
But that phrase is hilarious.
Because you can't imagine it.
Jen, elevated arousal. Anywho, Darwin proposed that spinning patients around excessively would increase pressure and in turn decrease brain congestion. Dr. Joseph Mason Cox then developed a technique for rotating patients using a chair with a specific design, that hence the Cox's chair. Rotational therapy spread across Europe rapidly and there were no objectively adverse effects. Bollocks.
But were there any positive effects?
But patients reported feeling less good, relaxed and comfortable and calm. In addition, Cox's chair was sometimes used abusively. No.
These are people in... who were suffering from mania. They felt less calm.
Less calm. Less relaxed, less comfortable.
Like, thanks. I'm so glad I came.
Yeah, doctor, I feel manic. Get in the chair, lad. Get in the chair.
We spin you around. Like
Motley Crue drummer.
Oh, it's like the waltzers or that one they have at, what's it called? The Black Revolver at Drayton Manor.
Ooh.
Absolutely hideous. Dark disco lights, and I love a disco, but not while I'm spinning around at pace. No, thank you.
But can you imagine being insane?
And
In addition, Cox's chair was sometimes used abusively in psychiatric settings, and the therapy itself was not pleasant as the patient's head and body was attached to a spinning device in a dark room. So you nailed that then.
Maybe that's what it was modelled on.
What, the waltzers?
No, the Black Revolver.
Possibly. I mean, that's grim.
It's like torture.
Considering the fact that common side effects was fear... an extreme pallor. 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 What is it? What does that mean?
Being really pale, like deathly looking.
Ha. Extreme paleness, vomiting and pooing yourself and avoiding your bladder. The doctor always overdid it with the circumvolutions. Of course, he didn't think so at the time. He wrote happily that after a few circumvolutions, I have witnessed the soothing lull effects when the mind has become tranquilised and the body quiescent. That's a state of period of inactivity or dormancy. It's true that after being spun around until fluid leaves your body, fluid and poop leave your body out of every orifice, that the fight's gone from you, isn't it, really?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not really fixing the mania. It's just distracting you for a short while, because if you feel sick and you're staggering around like you just got off a roundabout and your dad was spinning it too fast, then you're not going to be concentrating. I mean, maybe they thought that was a successful treatment, but... I mean, like, shitting yourself and puking and pale and dizzy.
You're not going to be gobbing off after that,
but then
are
as
you?
Soon as that settled down, you probably still...
I'd be raging. You're like, Ben, do you want the chair again? No.
Well, no. Maybe that would be enough to...
chill
you out. Well, not chill you out, but encourage people to try and sit on their emotions, as it were.
So can we agree that one is definitely about...
That's a great health? One. It's a great one. So well done.
So what,
five episodes in.
How do you feel about rotational therapy?
I'm not a fan, because with the fibromyalgia, and I don't know if I've described it in this way on the podcast yet, but the best way that I generally describe it is that it's a hypersensitivity condition in every possible way that you can think of. And so for me... That, you know, when you go down a dip in the road unexpectedly and your stomach turns over, that is overwhelmingly unbearable for me. I can't stand that feeling. Being spun around, going too fast, going upside down. No, thank you. I am a professional coat holder at theme parks. I'm not down with any of that. It's not pleasant. People find it thrilling. But then also, the ones that spin you around, sometimes you might be on the inside and it's not quite as bad, or you might be on the outside and it's not quite as bad. But most of them will crush the person next to you up against you for the vast majority of the ride, and all of my skin hurts.
Yeah.
So that would be torture for me, and I'm not struggling with my mental health.
Alton Towers is a big no-no for
you. I've never been. I just refuse to go, even though they sometimes do the free days for military and you can go along, and I'm not, what's the point? I'll go on the water rapids and go in the zoo bit. Have they even got a zoo at Alton Towers? I don't know.
I have no idea. When I first read that, I thought, I mean, I wouldn't say I suffer from episodes of mania. If that was the way they were dealing with people back in the day... I don't, like, can you imagine, like, you're already struggling, so it's mania or another form of mental health, and they put you in like a budget ride and you end up being covered in shit, piss, vomit. He said all fluid, so I'm assuming everything else that comes in between. Get it?
Yes.
Oh, just the humiliation and the, I mean, how would they test whether or not it worked? Because after that, anyone's going to be like, no, fair one, fair one. I'm
well,
not crazy.
The thing,
anymore.
Like, what's the control group? Do they get people who
aren't
really I mean, I don't know what variations of fairground rides they had in those days. I don't know. But if they had any, you know, they'd like test regular folk out on those and then get patients and go, well, you know, it calmed them down. Like, well, it didn't, did it? It just made them queasy.
There is a theme that runs through all these ones that we've spoken about up to this episode. They're very barbaric. Inhumane,
violently physical.
Now,
at
some point we will get onto less violent, less barbaric means of dealing with mental health. But from like the 16th century onwards, it was all very much like, well, let's play by ear.
I think they're experimenting, and sometimes things work, and you know, you've got to try, really. And if you can get people to sign up, the trouble I have is when people are mentally unwell, and it depends how severely mentally unwell.
Yeah.
But I get the feeling that it's probably not them who's consenting to these treatments tried.
No.
If anybody, a lot of them might have just been in a home already for people who were mentally unwell, and they'll just try it on them literally like human guinea pigs.
Yeah.
Not that it's okay to test things on guinea pigs, but that sometimes parents or other relatives might say, yeah, you know, I'll give my consent for them to test it. But
like Bobby Kennedy?
It's terrifying.
And a story about Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah.
Got his daughter lobotomised because she was having intense PMS.
Yeah.
What a prick.
Well, you know, times are a-changing.
Anyway, I'd try that, I would. As long as it wasn't filmed and it wasn't shared with anyone, because I think a lot of stuff would come out of me. I'd have a go at that. Like, shake the mania out of me.
Okay.
Let's do that.
I could spin you around on that office chair you're sitting on really fast.
It's only got 4 out of 5 wheels. So
okay, let's not do that.
No. So there you go. There's my preposterous past procedure.
You said it right like 3 times as well.
I'm awesome.
This is somewhat of an anniversary episode, and the more eagle-eyed, well, I don't know. What's the ear version of that?
Stout-eared.
Stout?
I don't know. Shrew-eared.
Like a strong ale. Anyway, I don't know what the... Those of you who follow either Ben or myself individually on social media or the podcast itself will probably be aware that this week is somewhat of an anniversary. Not necessarily, we didn't start doing the podcast straight away. I think it was about September time had spoken to people we felt needed to know before we recorded, and we're still finding out to this day that we missed some of those people off. Apologies, but it's a very emotional time. But yes, it's a year since that moment, which was a catalyst for us deciding to do this podcast and reach out to people, let as many people as possible know that it is perfectly normal. In fact, I've said it before, but you know, 1 in every 4 people will suffer with a mental health issue in any given year. So it's not the same 1 in 4 people every year. It's an awful lot of folk. It's not abnormal. There shouldn't be a stigma. So we're having a little bit of a celebration that you're still here, my love.
And thank you, by the way. That's nice. And I just want to say as well, what you put on social media was so typically you. Every word was considered, and it wasn't an overly emotional post. It was just a post of gratitude and relief. And it didn't make me emotional in the sense of, oh, you've made me feel bad. Some of the feedback we've had, some people, not struggle, but they feel a tad uncomfortable with the way in which we talk about that situation. Now, I don't want to say suicide attempt, because I think that would be over-egging it a little bit. I think it was just an experience for me. It was thoughts of suicide, and it was something that has spurred such a change in me. And I know we've already discussed this, that you're happy that I'm still here, and you're happy that I am being a little bit more vocal and open. I'm actually talking to humans as well, which is, if you know me, you know it's a big deal. But for you, it's always going to be in the back of your mind. But for these 12 months, I have spoken to more people about mental health, sorry. I have listened to more people. I've had more people talk about experiences that they've had. And it's made me feel so happy. And that sounds awful, but I can't think of any other way to describe it. It makes me feel so happy that people now feel comfortable enough to go, oh, it's not just me, or, you know, it's not just my brother or sister or my mum or dad or friend.
It's a great thing to be happy about.
And
that's, you know, awareness is key. We can't say it enough. It isn't unusual. It's not unusual. And as long as people feel that it's all right to talk about, I mean, on that post I put on the other day, 6th of May was actually the anniversary. And so many people saying, I've been in this dark place myself. Thank you so much for opening up the dialogue. And don't get me wrong, there are plenty of things like this, podcasts and pages and things on social media where people are doing the same thing, but we're all fighting for a common goal. We all want the same thing, and...
Denzel doesn't.
He doesn't. He wants us to be so sad.
What a dipshit.
He wants us to join him in his...
Misery
cloud
horse.
Of misery. Fucking buffoon.
Piss off, Moby.
Moby?
Yeah, that miserable... bald-headed DJ dude.
A whale?
No. Anyway.
That was weird.
It has definitely been a challenging 12 months. But for me, if I'm being completely selfish, it's been revelatory. It's been really helpful. And no longer is there any ideation there. No longer is that I think there's a predetermined path I have to follow just because I have a mental illness. It's changed me. But then I know that... just like anything in this situation, there's always a trade-off, and you will always be on edge when I don't answer a message or you hear me laughing and joking and you're not down there. I get that. I do get that. So it's not all, you know, peaches and cream, chips and gravy.
Stop.
I could go on.
I know.
I mean, I got a nice chilled glass of rosé brut. Life could not get any better.
And you started a new job?
Started a new job. And it's wonderful. Also, in relation to the frequency of the episodes, like Jem already pointed out, it's not something that we can just pick up and go on like a serial basis. Like, yeah, you know, this week let's talk about it. Because there's always that concern that it could depress me. And, you know, there will be times when talking about it will get me down. But
If you're already depressed and we don't want to make it worse. And it's just... it's not worth that. I know that probably sounds dreadful, but I'm not going to sit here and allow you to feel worse for the sake of continuing to reach out to people when we have 4 episodes out there already. Yeah. And I know that some people do habitually listen to them. You know, they don't just listen to them once and go, okay, when's the next one? Some of them are re-listening because they really find the message useful. There's something there still, and we are contributing without doing it to the detriment of your mental health. Yeah.
And I bet all of our marital dildos that not everyone's listening to episode 3 habitually. Unless they're
really
sadists.
Really, yeah. Probably not.
But yeah, thank you so much for the listening and the support. And I mean this with every ounce of sincerity. Please keep messaging us if you are struggling or you want someone to talk to, or you want to reach out and have someone who understands listen to you. We're always here. So thank you very much.
Mental Health Awareness Month in May, but from tomorrow, the 10th of May, no idea when this will be edited and actually out to you, but it's Mental Health Awareness Week. So we're going to share some tips with you to get involved and spread the word.
The first one, Gemma did share this via our social media platforms, but this is, and I genuinely cannot stress this enough, it is such an important course. It's incredibly informative. She's laughing, so I'm saying incredibly again. It's super informative. And Gemma has helped so many people. Not because of this. This has just emboldened her desire to help people. But it's incredible, isn't it, Gem?
Everything's incredible,
yeah, everything is incredible. You can go onto our Twitter and find it. But we can give you the website address now. It's explore.freecoursesinengland.co.uk/mental-health. And there you can do it. It's available in Welsh as well. I strongly, strongly encourage people to do this. Signed up for it myself. They are on the ball, really helpful. Yeah, please do that.
There are also a bunch of resources on Mind's website, mind.org.uk. They're encouraging people to get involved in the conversation naturally. So if you post anything on social media, there's a couple of hashtags on there that you can use, but they have social media packs for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn, and they are all in English and Welsh. They of course have a donate button if you wanted to contribute to the work that they do. They also have workplace/organization packs, so whether you are an employer or an employee or just want to send things round to your mates, there's no harm whatsoever. Let's keep the conversation going. Download it, it's free, and send it out and get people talking.
Excellent. There's also one that is for children. This one's called Mental Health Foundation. It also goes by the name of the Peer Education Project. This one is aimed at delivering syllabus to children between the ages of primary school age, so 7 all the way up to year 11. And there's so many things on there. It offers staff training as well for teachers. I downloaded a pack today that I'm going to do with my children next week. It's a nature school pack, so it's just about mindfulness. And because let's face it, I mean, we're going to get onto this later on, but the children have been through, not just in this country, but children have been through a hell of a lot over the last 12 months. So we can do anything to help them regain some control and some stability in their mental health, then I strongly suggest you look at this. It's absolutely wonderful. And last but not least, this is not necessarily for anyone in particular. I just think it needs to be celebrated because it's amazing. A place called Ash Villa in Sleaford, which is not far from us. Well, Greyley, sorry. They've just opened a 15-bed acute treatment ward, which is going to provide support for women who are experiencing severe short-term episode of mental health, or they cannot be safely supported by the community. That can be found through the NHS Foundation Trust. So if you do want more information, or if you know anybody that would benefit from some help, please look for that. We're starting to see kind of like a turn where people are taking it a little bit more seriously than they have done before, and trying to make sure there's enough treatment out there for everybody, not just those who can afford it.
Yeah, a long way to go. And that leads us on quite nicely to...
Oh, that's not true, mate.
What accent is that you're...
It's not an accent. It's a feeling. It's it's a belief. It's a mindset. It's not an accent.
Roger.
So do a different one. So do my Scottie Pippen one. Oh, man. That's not true, mate.
Have you done that one before?
I don't know. It's been 4 years since we recorded an episode.
Well, it's not just that. I was going to say, because we think that we've mentioned this topic before, not in definitely not in the detail that we're going to cover it in just now, but because it is 15 years between each episode and we're always drunk bitches when we're recording, it's difficult to remember. So we think we might have, but anyway, it's pertinent nonetheless. We have had quite a few chats with people, or people have reached out to us, and the vast majority of them recently have been below the age of 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think, whether or not we've already discussed it, that it's something that needs visiting / revisiting.
And also, if we have revisited it, shut your mouth. Well, don't complain.
So it's actually the Mental Health Foundation, which you already referred to, that I am looking at for the statistics at mentalhealth.org.uk. And there is a common misconception that young people don't struggle with mental health issues. People will explain it away by puberty and mood swings, you know, hormonal differences. They will explain it away by attention seeking, tragically, which they do at any age, but I think more so where the younger they are. And it's completely nonsensical and untrue. 20% of adolescents may experience a mental health problem in any given year. So if you take the stat I already mentioned, which is 1 in 4 adults, then that's only just below that, you know, 1 in 5. Yep. 50% of mental health problems are established by age 14 and 75% by age 24. And I know that for many, many years, the leading cause of death in men around that age, you know, up to mid-20s, has been suicide.
Yeah.
So that's not very surprising when you think about it in those terms, but I think a lot of people will probably struggle to get their head around the fact that people who generally suffer with mental health issues have already begun suffering at the latest by the age of 24.
They're quite stark, those figures.
There are other stats on there, but, you know, I think we got the point across, so don't need to delve into those too much. But they also have a spectacular quote on here, which says, "We take a life course approach to mental health because good mental health begins in infancy." And I think those formative years are so important. It's not to say that if you have good mental health in infancy and adolescence, that you're definitely not going to develop a mental health issue later on in life. But development and the way your cognitive behaviour evolves is almost completely cemented much earlier in life than most people probably realise.
Indeed. They don't understand the effect of childhood trauma, and they don't believe that it's something that can shape your mental health and your behaviour into adolescence. Even if I wasn't working in education, it's the thing that really frustrates me, is that young people are screaming out for help, and they're giving us all the indications, and they're telling us, and they're explain as best they can. And some people are just chinning it off as, like you pointed out, it's a phase, a fad, it's your age, you know, you're changing, it's puberty, blah, blah. And sometimes it really isn't. And we have to consider that it is totally feasible that children will experience or suffer things far sooner than our generation did and the generation before ours did, just because of evolution and the way the body develops.
Not just the way the body develops, but everything that's out there today as well. I mean, I'm quite the cynic when it comes to social media around children. I can't stand it. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but when people, and I'll probably get loads of abuse online for this, but when people have like toddlers and they're taking photos with Instagram filters because they don't like their own face, it really bums me out, because toddlers are beautiful and you're beautiful too, but I feel like that's projecting insecurities onto small children. I really don't like it. I don't like it when people do it to me. Grown adults turn a phone around and they've got some stupid filter with fucking bunny ears or something. I'm like, get away. But I just think it's teaching kids from a really, really young age then what they naturally are isn't enough.
Yeah, isn't enough.
And I find it distressing. So it doesn't surprise me when youngsters grow up and have serious body image or even body dysmorphia issues. Anyway.
But first, that point, can't we just, the collective, we have to listen to them. We have to pay attention to them. I know that for some people it'd be hard to digest and it'd be hard to accept that a child of that age could be going through something, but we do have to listen to them.
Especially at the moment. And
yeah, but what's happened in this last 12 months?
I would like to think that anyone would listen to a child if they said they were struggling in that way. But of course, it's difficult for particularly younger children to articulate what they actually mean. I saw a thing, I think it was a meme actually, that was saying something about my kid always says they've got a sore tummy or whatever, and what they're actually struggling with is anxiety, and that's the way it manifests in them, which, and it also does in adult humans, and they will have kind of IBS type symptoms. But I think we don't, and I'm also wary of jumping to conclusions, and you know, if they've had a bit of an upset tummy a few times, going, oh god, you know, they're depressed and whatever else, or anxious. But yeah, we need to be alert to that, and especially after this past year with all the weirdness of lockdowns and bubbles in schools and not seeing their mates, not doing the sports that they need, which is brilliant for mental health.
Those, you know, being those children that were stuck in the house for a majority of lockdown in front of a TV or a computer console because their parents had to work or they couldn't go into school. We, more than ever, we have to be so aware of the effects of the last 12 months. Just listen to them. Because sometimes that's all they really want, is just to be heard. I know it sounds a little bit cliched, but just listen to them.
And perhaps if people are in a situation such as yours, where you're a primary school teacher, encourage them to talk to each other, because it's that shared experience that will help them realize that they're not odd and that so many of them are feeling the same. But kids won't think to talk about that kind of stuff. And in the one sense, that's great, because when they see their mates again, it all kind of goes out the window. But for some of them, it will weigh a little heavier and it will stay a little longer, and they just need to get it out and talk to someone. But it might be easier to talk to another child.
Because believe it or not, they know, don't they? Well, he's not, or she's not feeling the same way as me, so I must be different. And I'm on my own here. Do you want to mention the Dove advert or not?
I suppose it ties into what I just said, really, about the pressure on youngsters, on everybody actually, but youngsters in particular, while it is those formative years. Dove released an advert recently, and it's absolutely brilliant. It's essentially the untouching up of a photo, and it shows a youngish teenage girl, I presume, and the impact that it has on them to see that all these images they're trying to live up to, influencers on Instagram and so on and so forth, that they're not real. And I think you only have to pay attention to the media storm, I suppose some people would refer to it as, of, and you know what, I don't follow any of it because I think it's tripe, so I can't even remember, but one of the Kardashians, I don't know.
Probably.
And there was a photo of her that was taken by a family member, and she like mounted a legal challenge to get it taken down because it was untouched up, and it was just an actual picture of her. And she's a beautiful woman, and she looked absolutely fine, but obviously she didn't look like an airbrushed supermodel. So there was all this hoo-ha where she was trying to get it taken down. And I think that's the world that we're living in, where people are constantly striving for something that is actually completely unachievable. It isn't real.
No.
Nobody looks like that. Everybody has stretch marks and cellulite and moles and imperfections. But are they really imperfections? Because we all have them. It's just part of your normal self. Yeah. And let's not convince youngsters and teenagers that what they are naturally isn't the same as everything else that's out there. It's just, it's really miserable.
I agree. And it's something that is, it's obvious at the age I teach, and some of the things they say, it's quite dispiriting, to be honest. But I do agree with you. And there's a quote that I read when I first started teaching, and it's by Frederick Douglass. It underpins the importance of not being able to give children their childhood back. And the quote is, "It's easier to build strong children than repair broken adults." And we can do that if we all just start listening to them and give them the support that they quite obviously need. I feel like this has become, unintentionally, obviously, a social media episode. But it's not all piles of shit on social media. There are some really helpful, positive pages, and it's delightful to see them.
It's not all piles of shit on social media.
Well, what else would you like to say? One of the pages that I follow on Instagram, it's called The Real Depression Project, and the content that they share is next level. It is wonderful. Some of it's a bit, you know, close to home, but it's so honest and it's a little bit raw. And one of the things that I saw recently, they have these things where it's like six or seven posts, pictures.
Yeah, posts, I think.
And it was all like a sequence of posts. And the most important things to remind someone in a depressive episode. One of them really hit home with me, and it was how to deal with someone when they're in a depressive episode. And you are a dab hand at it. I would say you are a professional at dealing with depressionals.
Thanks very much.
One of the things that I would like to talk about very quickly, if that's okay, is depressive episode. Ignoring your inner critic. When someone's in a depressive episode, normally they are trapped and imprisoned by things they've convinced themselves of. Could be something, that person's mad at me, or I've embarrassed myself and I can't get back there. And it could be quite severe, like I'm not a good person, I hate myself, I'm useless, I'm not good at this, blah, blah, blah. And once you allow that inner critic, and everyone has that inner critic, I'm not saying it's just a depressional thing. Once you allow the inner critic to take control, that's when the episode sets in, and that's when you lose control and you sink further and further into that episode, and it becomes hard to pull yourself out of it. Now, what you do, and which I think is wonderful, you don't bombard me with positivity. You don't go, "Oh, it's all right. You're a good egg." You identify what's going on, and you allow me to, I don't want to say wallow, but you allow me just to have that, because you know that nothing you can say will make it go away instantaneously. But you know not to bombard me with positivity. You also understand that it will pass.
Well, I hope that it will pass.
And you always, you spend time encouraging me to believe that I'm not the piece of shit that my mind has convinced me that I am. And I think the most helpful response to my episodes, your acknowledgement, where you just go, "I understand you're on one. I understand that it's not the best day." But you don't try and change it. You don't try and force me to think positively. You just understand, and I know that you're there, and I know that I don't have to go through the rigmarole of explaining to you that I am depressed or I can't face it today. That's a fantastic support system.
I think that stems really from simply knowing that I can't fix it, and that's actually a really important thing for those who care for or support or are around people who struggle. It's a chemical imbalance. I can do an awful lot of stuff to not make it worse, but a lot of the time it's just riding out the storm and being there at the end of it. I can't fix it. I cannot fix it. I'm not a chemical that can climb inside your brain and make things better.
Can you imagine if you were a chemical? Can you imagine the chemical compound you would be?
No.
What's the most abrasive chemical compound you can think of? You are absolutely right. You will never understand just how much I appreciate your presence and understanding. And I'm so glad you said that. No one will ever make it go away. Nobody will ever make your anxiety disappear or your PTSD disappear. But what they can do is make you more equipped to handle it.
Do you want to do that again?
Yeah.
Why are you so windy? I don't think you should have sparkling rosé anymore.
And I think there are a lot of people who are in the generation older than us that truly believe that it can go away and it can disappear, and well, rather than managing it, rather than just accepting, right, this is...
We've been through this before though, haven't we? And there's obviously, there's, you know, episodic or circumstantial depression, which definitely can go away. So, you know, postnatal depression, very thankfully, usually doesn't go on for years and years and years. It'll be a relatively short episode. So there are types of depression and hormone and chemical imbalances going on, which can be rectified.
Yeah.
And also with things like anxiety, someone who is with you can help alleviate the symptoms of a panic attack, for example, can talk to you, can try and ground you, can encourage you to do breathing exercises and that kind of stuff. Or just in general, I mean, we're talking to some people that we know, very close friends of ours recently, and the wife in that marriage was saying that she struggles, she gets too anxious to put in her prescription for her anxiety. Yeah. And so I immediately said to the husband, well, why don't... can you not put a reminder in your phone and you just take that on, and then it doesn't become an extra thing for her to be anxious about, and she still gets her medication. And, you know, and sometimes it can be something that appears relatively simple when you're not in the throes of that situation, but it's so hard to see potential solutions if you are trying to calm somebody down or, you know, it's not the... you know, I know something that you don't. It's not like that at all. It's just that I can sit back and have that objectivity and say, oh, well, how about you put a reminder in your phone for when her prescription's due and you just go and get it?
Yeah.
And it's such a simple solution.
To an outsider, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's no slight on anyone for not thinking of that. It's a privilege to be able to step back from that situation and not have the worry of dealing with the daily symptoms to be able to suggest that. But then that's great, because if we weren't having that conversation, I would never have been able to say that.
I was just about to say, on that note, the frequency of conversations that are happening now in regards to mental health support, just, it really sautés my onions. It really makes me so happy. It makes me so happy. And it's such an odd phrase to use when we're talking about
sautéed my onions.
No, people talking about how depressed they are makes me happy. it that doesn't, but it's the... it's the trust and the openness that people are now starting, or they're developing that trust and openness. It is invaluable knowing that you can trust someone so much that you can just talk openly about when you're not yourself and when you're struggling with anxiety, with depression, with anything else that goes on in your head. It's really important to have someone that understands. And if you don't have that person that understands, reach out to us.
Yeah, or... as we've said many times, there are numerous organisations online that have chat services, the Samaritans, people like that. There is always somebody to talk to. Yep. Keep the conversation going.
Keep that conversation going. Just want to say before we close the episode off, massive, huge thank you to everybody that is engaged with us, that has liked our social media posts, shared our social media posts. Thank you to those people that have reached out. It all helps with the effort of keeping the conversation going. And never forget that. We'll try to make sure that there isn't a huge gap between episode 5 and episode 6. But
if there is, there is.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Ain't it?